I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of.
Welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, one day, he was married to a successful author and a magazine publisher, putting the finishing touches on their book on marriage. And the next, he was a widower with four grieving young daughters. Without warning, the future that Jonathan and Winter had planned together dissolved, leaving him to try to process what had happened. How do you cope with the gravity of such a loss? Could he support his grieving children who missed their mother so deeply? Could he continue Winter's legacy and honor her memory? How does anyone still have faith in God after such a tragedy? Jonathan Pitts joins me today to tell the amazing story about the loss of his wife and of God's faithfulness through it all. You'll find his story in his brand new book, My Winter Season, Seeing God's Faithfulness in the Shadow of Grief. And Winter, as you may not know, is the niece of Dr. Tony Evans. And I told Jonathan before the show, I had the privilege of doing an event. Both Winter and I spoke at the same event a few years ago. I had the privilege of meeting her. What a striking young woman, and what a jarring loss when it happened. So you're going to be amazed when you hear Jonathan's story. Again, we've got five copies of his book. It really reads like a novel. If you want in on the drawing, you can just text the word book to 877-933-2484. And if you've got questions for Jonathan as the story unfolds, please go ahead and text those in and we'll weave those into the conversation. Quick announcement, mark your calendars. This Sunday night, it's our live stream event, A Night of Restoration. I'll do some teaching on God's desire, willingness, and power to restore your soul. And then we're going to spend some time praying for you. We've got over $600 worth of gifts just to give away, just to bless you. It's all free. You'll find information on our website, or you can just text the word event to this number. It'll kick back a link and you'll get the information. It's free, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time this Sunday night. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Jonathan Pitts is an author, speaker, and executive pastor at Church of the City in Franklin, Tennessee. Prior to pastoring, Jonathan was executive director at the Urban Alternative, the National Ministry of Dr. Tony Evans in Dallas, Texas. He now lives in Franklin, Tennessee with his dear four daughters. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
It's good to be with you today.
Yeah, looking so forward to the conversation. And we love to start every day, Jonathan, talking scripture and wondering what passage you've been pondering these days.
Yeah, for me, Philippians 4, the whole chapter has been inspirational for the last couple of years, but since Winter's passing. But more specifically, Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, which says, whatever is true, whatever is right, whatever is honorable, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things. And I don't know about you, but just these times that we're in and COVID and all the loss and all the things that people are going through, lost expectations, I've been walking throughout all that with everyone else, and there's this reality that you have the Apostle Paul from prison writing a letter to a church that's being persecuted, encouraging them to do what many would call the discipline of celebration, just choosing to see what is beautiful and what is right that's going on in the world. Earlier on in the chapter, he says, Philippians 4:4, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Like, he's telling them from prison to rejoice, like, regardless of their circumstances, to find joy and to find it in the things that are right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, praiseworthy, trustworthy, you know, all these things, because they exist even in our hardship, even in our difficulty. And that's really, for me, really been a theme verse since Winter passed, because it's a reminder that even though obviously some really difficult, dark, ugly things happen, because that's what death is. It's ugly. God didn't intend it. There's still beauty, and God's still working, and he's redeeming, and he's also just doing some other beautiful things along the way that I've gotten to be, I've had a front row seat to. And so I'm just choosing to rejoice, and we're choosing to look for what's right and beautiful and pure and lovely and admirable and excellent and praiseworthy. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Man, thank you. I love the idea of the discipline of celebration. I didn't plan to ask this question so early on, but I just want to know, who are you becoming that you feel like maybe you couldn't have become had you not walked through such a dark valley of the shadow?
It's interesting. Who I'm becoming. I don't think I really realized. The only person that would really tell me this was Winter, but I didn't realize how much of a people pleaser I was, and how much of a how much power I gave away to others in an effort to just really have everybody in a good place. And I just kind of played that game of just trying to. I remember even like Winter's funeral, like just trying to plan the funeral around other people's schedules. And I'll never forget Dr. Evans' son Anthony looking at me and just saying, "Jonathan, like, you have to do what's best for you and your girls, and everybody else can adjust." And that's not a rude kind of thought. It's like just putting your family first. And you know, and even in Winter's death, I was still trying to figure out how to manage everybody else and make everybody else be okay. And so I think I'm becoming a freer version of myself that's okay with not having to do anything other than what God's asking me to do. And anything more than that is actually not God's best, even if it makes me feel better about myself because everybody else is happy. So, yeah, I'm a more free version of myself.
That's amazing. Well, tell us about Winter, if you would.
Winter, she was a dreamer. That's the one word I would use to describe her. It's funny because she built this pretty amazing ministry for Girls Like You magazine, and she published more than 8 books when she before she passed away, and more resources since she's passed. But she was a dreamer that didn't really have a strategic bone in her body, didn't think strategically, didn't want to think strategically. God gave her a dream. I'll never forget. We were 21 years old. We were just a few months before we got engaged. And I just was asking her what she wanted to do with her life. And she said, "I want to write a book." And I just said, "Write a book about what?" And she's like, "I don't know." And I said, "Well, you might want to figure that out." And I was kind of like, almost like a condescending type A personality thing to say. And she just goes, she just kind of looks at me and almost dismisses what I said and just moved on with life. And what's funny is she never had a strategy. She always had a dream. Like, she knew she wanted to write. And when God really birthed his dream in her heart, and then he accomplished it when she had her daughters, our 4 girls, she began writing for them. And without any strategic thought, God gave her this incredible, beautiful ministry that she accomplished for him. And it's been, honestly, like one of the great joys of my life is just telling that story, because I had a front row seat to watching a girl dream big and God accomplished those dreams for her, because her dreams were in line with his will for her life. So, yeah, she was a dreamer. She also was a very easygoing, laid-back girl. I mean, you met her, and she wasn't kind of no rah-rah from Winter. She was really laid back. She took a nap almost every day, and she lived easily in the world, very easily.
You know, Crystal Evans Hurst is a friend of mine, and I chuckled when I read in your book, and I don't know if it was at the funeral that Crystal had said she didn't know anybody who took more naps and watched more movies than Winter, and yet look what the girl accomplished. And that did so much for my heart, Jonathan, because it's like God wired us all each so uniquely. And we tend to, you know, in this high productivity where we only value results and strategy, I mean, would tend to discount, like, there's only one way to get things done, and there isn't. And I just love that God did what he did in and through her while she remained being herself, you know?
Yeah, it was, Crystal would say that she worked from a place of rest. She was never anxious to get anything done. She did everything from a place of rest, and she was actually, she wrote a book called God's Girl Says Yes. And the whole point of the book is you can say yes to God when you say no to a lot of other things. And Winter was really good at saying no, even to me, which as her husband, I was like, wait a second. But she was just really good. She only wanted to do what God called her to. And so she just kind of, in a way, was efficient because she wasn't trying to accomplish more than she was supposed to accomplish. And that was really frustrating for me early on in marriage. And then I realized how productive she was, because she didn't have to do everything, which I think is kind of this American Western mindset we have of, you know, accomplishment. Somehow Winter didn't absorb that growing up where she grew up, and it served her well, because she lived 38 years and accomplished a whole lot in 38 years and never seemed like she was trying to accomplish anything. It's kind of a mystery to me, actually.
Yes. Yeah, I'm more of a strategic thinker myself, so that really completely inspired me to just see that she could live from a place of rest, be who she was, and God did what he does. And I think that's amazing. What kind of mama was she?
What kind of mom was she?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a laid-back mom, loved her girls a lot, wanted her girls to know truth, but also wanted her girls to have fun. So you would catch her oftentimes just on the couch with one of my girls, just laying down, taking a nap with them, or playing a, you know, Scrabble game with them. Like, she really wanted the girls to enjoy life. And it's interesting, because as a little girl, she grew up, her dad was a drug addict and really wasn't in her life. And grew up, her mom gave her life to Jesus when she, I think about maybe the year she was born or the year before she was born. And somehow, some way, she grew up in a faith like many of us do, this kind of performance based, and had this idea that we have to, our job is to make God happy, you know. And when she realized, I think it was around the time she had our girls, when she realized that that wasn't the father we had, she really wanted our girls to understand God's love in a way that helped them understand that, you know, God's not the fun police that's trying to stop us from enjoying life. And so really, even when she invested her life in For Girls Like You, it was all in an effort to help our girls see and understand the God that loves them is also a God that cares about their deep joy and delight. And so she was, she moved easy even with our girls, really trusting, never really high strung. She was a really, really good mom. And she would have said she's not that baking bread, homeschooling type mom that like she thought she had to be, but she was just really easy, wasn't going to be too concerned about bedtime, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, she was the only way to describe mm-hmm. Winter is like really easy. She was easy with our girls as well, which means mm-hmm. she was just easy for them to like, but she also commanded respect as well. So she wasn't a pushover with our girls either. So she was mm-hmm. dynamic girl. It's kind of hard to explain. It's funny. Just having to try.
Yeah, I love that. Love it, Jonathan. Appreciate it so much. When we come back, if you would take us to that day you got up, you went for a run, and how your life took a massive turn. And we'll take it from there, talking to Jonathan Pitts, who just released the book, My Winter Season. Of course, winter spelled W-Y-N-T-E-R, his dear Winter, Seeing God's Faithfulness in the Shadow of Grief. We've got a handful of copies to give away. It's this wonderful story, and just you see how the Evans are just such an integral part of your family and how they stepped in, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit as well. We'll be back in just a moment. Thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live, talking to Jonathan Pitts today, and his book is titled My Winter Season, spelled W-Y-N-T-E-R, Seeing God's Faithfulness in the Shadow of Grief. Winter Pitts, his dear wife at 38 years old, died suddenly. She, if I remember this right, is the niece of Dr. Tony Evans, and as I mentioned at the open of the show, I had the privilege of doing a speaking event with her a few years ago, and what a treasured girl she was. And Jonathan, you've been giving us a little backstory on just what Winter was like as a mom and a wife. And if you wouldn't mind, bring us to that day. You open the book this way, where you get up to go for a run, and you're a morning person, she's not. Take it from there.
Yeah, I first need to say that it was a massive transition in our lives. We had been in Dallas for about 14 years, and I ran her uncle, Dr. Tony Evans, National Ministry for 7 years, and then seven years prior to that, I ran his son, Anthony Evans Jr.'s music career. And we were moving to Nashville from Dallas to Franklin, Tennessee, really, for me to pastor. I was going to be executive pastor at Church of the City. And so we'd already bought our house in Nashville, in Franklin. We'd already gotten our girls enrolled in school, spent a couple of days in Franklin, and then went back to Dallas for me to finish my last week of work. And we were staying at Winter's cousin Priscilla's house, and kind of a former home they had lived in that they still had. And we were staying there, and I got up to take a run. And I remember getting up that morning and getting out on this run, getting out about a mile and a half, super dark Texas, warm, balmy morning in July, and having this real sense to pray for my girls. So I prayed for them by name and kind of ran back into the house and got ready. Winter was still sleeping when I left for work. And when I was at work and said my goodbyes to a lot of staff members I'd worked with for years, Winter texted me and she just said, "Hey, I feel sick." And she put the sick emoji with the little emoji. And I asked her, I said, "What's going on?" And she never replied. So I didn't think much of it because Winter would, you know, get a stomach ache from time to time. It wasn't, like, uncommon. And so I went home. I picked up some Costco ribs and Caesar salad, which I'll probably never eat again, and went on to the house. And I walked in thinking Winter would be sick. And I also knew she had a deadline for a book project she was working on. And she told me earlier that day, "I need you to be on tonight." And I said, "Okay." I knew what that meant. It just meant, like, be available for the kids and give her space and quiet to write. And so I walked inside, and my sister-in-law was there with my two nieces, and they were all just on the couch, kind of a L-shaped couch, like doing each other's hair. Winter with my three youngest girls and my sister-in-law with her two girls. And I just didn't think anything of it. I'm like, oh, I guess she's okay. And so I laid down and took like a little power nap, and I got up in about 15 minutes, and my sister-in-law was leaving, and Winter said, I need to lay down. So she went and laid down, and I went to fix dinner. And I peeked my head in a few minutes in and said, hey, do you want to eat? And she said, I think I just need to rest for a while. So I said, okay, and I just went back and just made dinner and or put dinner together, and then we all sat down to eat, my girls and I, and my oldest wasn't there, thank God. And I went into the bedroom after dinner to floss. It was a short dinner, and went in there and flossed my teeth in the master bath. And I just kind of walked to the door and kind of looked out, and Winter had sat up. And then she just kind of slumped back over in a way that just seemed kind of unnatural, almost like that, you know, when you get up, but you don't feel like getting up, so you just kind of throw yourself over. But there was something unnatural about it. And so I just said, why are you playing like that? And I realized as soon as I said it that something was wrong. And long story short, what I thought was it seemed like a seizure of sorts that she was having. Was what's called cardiac dysrhythmia. Her heart got off rhythm. And so I spent the next 30 minutes of my life, maybe 25, 30 minutes, which are the most traumatic 30 minutes I've ever experienced, trying to save her life and waiting for the ambulance to come and praying deeply and then thinking about my girls and what do I do if she doesn't make it. And so one side of my brain, I'm praying for a miracle, and the other side, I'm trying to prepare for if it's the worst. I'm an Eagle Scout, so I kind of knew after, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 minutes, just the likelihood of her surviving. And so it's just really interesting to be in a place where you're praying for a miracle, and also as a leader, trying to figure out what do you do, like if she doesn't make it. And so she didn't make it. She, what I always say, it's 30 most traumatic minutes of my life were the most glorious and joyful for her. She just kind of slid gently into the arms of Jesus. And I truly believe that. It's what gave me peace even from the very beginning, even in the dark, even in the fear, even in the overwhelming sadness. There was always a constant, which is just the reality that the Bible says, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, which was always an abstract kind of verse for me until that point. Even I'd lost loved ones, but nothing that close and never in front of me like that. And so we rushed to the emergency room, and I would say goodbye to her there and have to share with my girls that their mom was gone as well.
Oh, I'm just so sorry, Jonathan. I just, again, remember seeing the tweets and Instagram posts, and I gasped. I couldn't even believe it. I had to do a double take going, I'm not reading this right, and trying to imagine your family. And so the ambulance, after you trying CPR for 20 to 30 minutes, and then they took over and brought her in. At one point in the hospital, they'd actually gotten a little bit of a pulse back. So you were out in the waiting room, and all kinds of family and friends showed up, right? So there was a point where you still probably didn't know for sure, or did you at that point have a sense that this wasn't going to go your way, so to speak?
Yeah, I knew it would have to be a miracle, and it's actually one of the things that I when I went to counseling, and I still do counseling, but one of the things I really had struggled with was just this reality of, like, and maybe a lot of believers struggle with this, is did I pray hard enough? Was it my lack of faith that didn't allow Winter to stay here or be here? And it was a lie from the enemy.
Right.
But ultimately, I just had this sense that, God, if you don't do a miracle, then I'm saying goodbye to my wife and leading these girls, and you need to show me how to do that because I have no idea. And so one of the attendants came out and just said, hey, we thought we had a pulse for a second, but we don't have one now. You might want to say goodbye to your wife. And so I walked into that room, basically fully aware that I was saying goodbye to her, and a few minutes later I'd be telling my girls that their mom was gone. And so, it was really interesting because I remember a couple of specific things, but in general, I didn't feel really strategic or calculated or anything. I honestly feel like the Holy Spirit was guiding me. And he also gave me some really beautiful, Dr. Evans showed up. He was one of the first people at the hospital, and he was there with me when I told my girls that their mom went home to be with Jesus, which were the words that I used because there were no other words that were true that could bring any kind of peace besides that. So it was an incredibly difficult and, as I look back, beautiful time, as weird as that might be for some people to hear.
Yeah, you talked about just the peace that you saw on her face, and she had her blue fuzzy socks on. I mean, just things that make her who she is, and that God ushered her to heaven, and there you are. And that Dr. Tony Evans rushed right in and was right there with you as you told your girls. Tell us the ages of your girls at that time.
My oldest would have been 14. My number two would have been 11, and my twins were 9. Yeah, and they're now almost 17, 14, and 11.
Wow.
Almost 12, sorry.
Wow, bless your heart. Talk about the process and the days that followed. No, I don't want to go there yet. Let's talk about Ben, your twin, and Anthony. I'm looking at my clock here. We've got about 3 minutes, so let's start with Ben. He's your twin brother. Talk about how he just turned on a dime and showed up and how that went for you.
Yeah, it's actually kind of fun to talk about that right now because I just helped him move with a U-Haul and dragging a car from New Jersey to Denver where he's moving his family now. But yeah, within about 12 hours of Winter passing away, because she passed away about 8 o'clock at night, he landed in Dallas from New Jersey and was with me for about 10 days or so by my side. And the one thing that was really difficult for me was sleeping. I found closing my eyes and the dark to be extremely horrifying. And I honestly could not sleep unless Ben was touching me. So we actually slept on an air mattress in my brother-in-law's living room because there wasn't a ton of room. Other family there, my girls there. And I'll never forget, like, just always having to have, like, a shoulder blade or a foot or a leg kind of beside his. We're identical twins, and we spent a lot of time together, obviously, starting in the womb. And, yeah, he was just there for me. He showed up for me and has been a constant friend my whole life. But in that moment, was exactly what I needed to even be able to sleep at night. And so actually it's kind of my honor now to be with him, helping him move and driving a U-Haul across the country. So I, in a way I've been able to kind of at least give a little bit back what he's given me, nowhere near, what he gave me. But, anyway, yeah, he's a constant friend.
Man, my younger sister lost her husband to pancreatic cancer, and her oldest daughter, who's the most like her husband, an adult, young adult, all on her own. But, when Donnie died, Katie went back there and she would crawl into bed every night next to Chrissy and read to her. And because Chrissy said the same thing, the nights, you know, were just horrific. And so to have her adult daughter just lying next to her, reading the books, praying her to sleep so she wouldn't have to close her eyes alone, she said, I'll just never be able to tell anybody what that meant to me. So that was just precious when I read that about your brother, you know.
That's powerful.
Yeah. Wow. Say a quick word. I'm sorry. I'm watching my clock. I have about a minute here before we break. But say a word about Anthony. So he would be Dr. Tony Evans' son, and so he would be kind of like your cousin-in-law. Is that right?
Yeah, Anthony was Winter's cousin and would become a fast friend of mine when I moved to Dallas. I would work with him for 7 years. But he honestly became a brother, and we'd become kind of accountability brothers to each other. And he actually flew in. My brother flew in from Jersey, and Anthony flew in from California. So two guys, both really close to me, descended on Dallas from both coasts. And Anthony was with me that entire time, helped me plan Winter's funeral, and then also would come on with us to Nashville and stay with me probably about 2 weeks and help me unpack my house and cook and drive my girls to school, and just became just a true hero for my family at a time where we needed him the most. And
that's amazing.
It's powerful. Yeah,
it is. And we're gonna just kind of take that walk with what Anthony did for you and how that was for you and what the days were like in those days that followed for you and for your girls. Talking to Jonathan Pitts, his book My Winter Season: Seeing God's Faithfulness in the Shadow of Grief. What a compelling story. More with Jonathan Pitts when we return. Thanks for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live, talking to Jonathan Pitts. He wrote the book, My Winter Season, Seeing God's Faithfulness in the Shadow of Grief. Jonathan was married to Winter Pitts, and Winter is the niece of Dr. Tony Evans, young 38-year-old beauty. They've been married 15 years. They've got 4 girls. In fact, you know probably that one of their daughters starred with Priscilla Shire, who's also a family member, in the film War Room. So this is a just precious couple, and they were just putting their finishing touches on a marriage book they were about to release. And one fateful day, Winter had kind of a heart attack. I'm not describing it correctly, but was gone suddenly. And in the days that followed, I was so blown away that Anthony Evans, one of Dr. Evans' son, who's like a brother to you, went out because this is such an amazing thing to me, is you guys were in transition. You weren't even in your house anymore because you were transitioning out of working for Dr. Tony Evans to serving as an executive pastor in another state. So you were in transition getting ready to move. Now, did you postpone that move at all, or did you just go forward? I mean, you were days away from moving your whole family to a whole new city.
Yeah, it's actually it's an interesting story and a God story. The day before Winter's funeral, my oldest daughter, Alina, who is wise beyond her years, she said, "Dad, can we take a walk?" And I said, "Okay." And so I walked with her and just wondered what she wanted to talk about. So she was quiet for a little while. And then finally she goes, "Dad, are we still going to Nashville?" And I said what I'd said a few times before to different people, which was, "I need to pray about it, think about it, you know, just be wise as a leader and as a dad." And it was the thing I just knew to say because it's like, I don't know, like, should we go? It's kind of risky now. Winter's not with me and, you know, I can stay in my old job. And what's funny, though, is Alina just looked at me and said, "Dad, mommy was as interested in going to Nashville as any of us, more interested. She was excited to go. I think we're supposed to go." And literally, as soon as she said those words, I knew we were supposed to go to Nashville. And so, yeah, we actually didn't delay it. What was really providential of God was we would Winter died on a Tuesday. We'd do her funeral on a Saturday. We'd bury her at a sunrise service on a Sunday. And then that Sunday afternoon, my girls were already scheduled to go to camp, a camp called Pine Cove in East Texas, a big camp that a lot of your listeners might know of. And my girls would go to that camp for a week. I would have a week to kind of decompress. And the camp was prepared for the girls. It was really beautiful. They're already prepared to take kids of grief on. And we'd one of the church members from Church of the City actually heard our story and knew we were coming and said, "Hey, I don't even want them to have to worry about anything. I'm going to fly my plane down to East Texas to pick them up." And so I drove out with a couple friends to East Texas to pick my girls up from camp. And 30 minutes later, we were on a plane on our way to Nashville on somebody's little private plane. I was just like, "Where am I right now?" And wow. It was one of those moments of, and there's been lots of these moments, of seeing God's extravagant love and how he cares for his people, especially when they're in desperate need. And he did it in a way that I couldn't deny that he was just rolling out the red carpet for us just to carry us at a time where we didn't have any energy. Like the thought of even picking my girls up from camp and going to DFW, this big airport, big international airport with four girls and a Yorkie poo and trying to figure out how to get all their luggage from camp there. God just provided, and he's continued to do that. You know, we landed. I was in Nashville for 2 weeks, and my oldest sister, who's never been married, never had kids, would come move in with me. And that's a whole other story in of itself, but God's just been really faithful to provide from day one of our loss. And our move to Nashville was precipitated by a 14-year-old girl telling her dad what she thought. It's pretty awesome.
Wow, absolutely amazing. And Anthony Evans, you know, comes to Nashville and you're acclimating to a job, you're acclimating to life without your wife, and he goes and buys knickknacks, furniture, and he's doing your house on his dime just because he didn't want you to think about it. And then he asked you to put your favorite pictures of Winter in a digital file. Tell us what he did next.
Yeah, he just showed up for us, and I know he spent lots of money that I'll never be able to pay back. But yeah, he took those pictures in a digital file and then sent them off to some framer, like a online framer, and would frame them, ship the pictures in, and then would hang them down my stairway. And so we all these pictures now, if you were to come to my house and walk up the first flight, you have all these beautiful pictures of like almost like a timeline of our family's life together. Pictures of the girls with Winter, picture was of me with Winter, family pictures of us, all these different beautiful pictures that are hanging on our stairs. And honestly, it was just a beautiful thing to walk by and recognize and thank God for every time I went up and down those stairs.
My goodness. And what was it like for your girls in the days that followed?
What was it like for them in the next day, the days that followed?
You know, you write out about the book, you have these dark days and you have these days full of God's presence. And I've heard that over and over again. And the grief that I've walked through, it's the same, like spasms of grief. And then you get through it. And the way you describe that, you know, it's just so how grief so goes. But I'm wondering with your girls, what was the process like for them? How did they process with you? Anything you can share in that regard?
Yeah, it was very different for all of them. My oldest, because she's got somewhat of a public profile, has shared publicly, so I can share it with you. But she kind of really operated from a place of real anger, which she'd call that like her baseline emotion. And so she was really angry. She traveled a lot with Winter. You know, they did the movie War Room. Like, Winter was on set with her. She actually did hair for Alina and for Priscilla Shire. And so they traveled with that. They wrote a book series together. They would travel and speak together. So they were really close friends and kind of comrades. And so she was just angry. And probably the hardest part of my grief, honestly, the first year was trying to figure out how to be a dad of a girl that was dealing with a lot of anger, especially when I didn't deal with a lot of anger. Anger wasn't like an emotion that I went to in any real level until probably 2 years in, and that would even surface as like more like annoyance than anger. But yeah, anger for her, but they all responded differently. And honestly, I was so out of it for the first month. I didn't work. I actually, my boss kind of gave me somewhat of a sabbatical, but the month I was supposed to start work, he actually just said, hey, I don't want to see you until after Labor Day. And that was on July, you know, 27th or something like that. So I took a good 5 weeks just to be to myself, and I actually slept a lot. Anthony was there, other people were there to care for the girls and be with the girls, and obviously I was with them, but they all processed it differently. And thankfully, you know, I think one of the things that's really helpful in moving forward is actually having some activity. And so my girls would start school, you know, 3 weeks after their mom passed away, and so they'd be in school at a new school. But what's really beautiful is that Franklin, Tennessee is this beautiful, quaint little town where everybody knows everybody, especially the pastors in that town. And so we were kind of a well-known family coming in just because of the role I was taking. And what God was giving us was like this real incubator for us to heal in. And so people were just, I mean, in unimaginable ways just coming to minister to us. And I'll never forget, Alina had gone to a volleyball camp that summer with her new volleyball team because she had already signed up for the volleyball team, and she had gone to this camp, and Alina spent maybe just a couple of days with these girls. Well, their coach packed up a van, a 15-passenger van, and drove a bunch of the girls down for the funeral. And so, like, that's the kind of people that God was going to surround us with. And so, yeah, their new friendships were really helpful. And I think the newness of where we were was actually really helpful for kind of a fresh start and not always sitting in the memory of what you just lost. And that was a gift from God, no doubt about it.
And how long has it been since Winter passed?
It's now been, let's see, a little over 2.5 years. In July, it'll be 3 years.
Wow.
So it's in some ways, it feels like a long time ago. In other ways, it feels like it was just yesterday.
Wow. You know, there's been so much loss and grief in the past 15 months for so many. And, you know, what's so heart-wrenching is people that have lost loved ones who couldn't be there in their final hours because of this wretched pandemic. And then there's others, you know, just, you know, teens who've lost their senior year. Not any comparison to losing your spouse the way you did. But as far as you're no stranger to such gut-wrenching loss, what kind of wisdom would you have? And just what have you learned from the process that maybe you could offer someone who's in the throes of grief right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, I think our American Western culture would say minimize your grief, move on fast, get over it, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And I would say that whatever loss you've experienced, that it's real, and to acknowledge it and to own it, because the only way you can move forward is if you process it. I would say that grief is just the process of dealing with lost expectations. That could be a loved one, that could be a spouse, that could be a child, that could be a job, that could be a vacation. That could be, for me, on my 40th birthday last year, I had this Pebble Beach trip planned. I always wanted to play Pebble Beach, and it was my 40th, 2 years after losing Winter. Like, God, this is going to be an awesome trip for me, and, you know, going into this next season of my life, and that got canceled because of COVID, and I had to grieve that. Like, it was a real thing I grieved, and so I would say don't minimize your loss. Like, just own it and process it, because it's the only way you can move through it. And, yeah, I would say there's a book I read by a guy named Leighton Ford called The Attentive Life. And it's this book that's really beautiful that just encourages you to be present where you are. And, you know, you can't be with God in the past if you're regretting the past. You can't be God if you're anxious about the future. You can only be with God in the present. And so being with God in the present means bringing God into your grief and being in your grief and not – because my tendency wasn't to stay in the past. My tendency was to run forward as fast as I could to just try to get out of it. And God wasn't there. God was right there with me in the grief. And so I would just encourage people just to be where they are, be in their grief, own it, feel it, invite God into it, and watch him really heal your heart.
You know, the morning you went for a run, you checked your phone for notifications and saw one that said something about exit strategy. And part of the work that you did was to help leaders transition from one spot to the next. So you made a mental note, coming back to that later. And now you have a whole chapter titled Exit Strategy. So tell us about that.
Yeah, it's one of the things I just said, paying attention. It was one of the first things that God would do that would kind of open my eyes to the fact that he was actually doing something, even in the loss. But that morning I woke up to take a run. I was trying to wake myself up, and one of the things I always do to do that is just kind of turn my phone on, which is probably a bad thing to do. But I got on my phone and started scrolling through, trying to wake up, and there was a title of an email that said, do you have an exit strategy? And I thought it was about leadership transitions, and so I just left it on my phone. I said, I'll come back to it, and, you know, dealing with nonprofit ministry, it's kind of a big deal when you have these personalities like a Dr. Evans. Like, what does it look like for a ministry to continue beyond him? And so you're helping with that. And so that night, though, after Winter passed, and we were still at the hospital, actually, I'll never forget, just sitting there in the waiting room and really not knowing what to do with myself. Like, I didn't really want to talk to anybody. I was kind of in shock. And so I just kind of got on my phone, and I opened up that email thinking it was like a article, and it was actually a devotional from Bible Gateway by a pastor named Randy Frazee. And
he was just on today, by the way. I was just going to say,
he
joins.
So
yeah, love him, but keep going.
It's one of the great joys I had was thanking him and his wife, Roseanne, for just their investment in me that they didn't know about just by being obedient to do what God's called them to do. But anyway, what would happen is I'd actually go back to my brother-in-law's house that night, and I would read to my family, including Dr. Evans and Priscilla and the other people that were there with me in my brother-in-law's house, my girls. I'd read this article, and basically Randy's telling the story of going water skiing for the first time and getting up on his skis and finally getting up on his skis and just being really excited that he got up. And eventually he starts to get tired and he goes, oh, what do I do? Like, if I let go of the rope, I'm going to crash and burn. And he didn't know how to get down. He'd never water skied before. And so he's just circling the lake and just getting exhausted because he's afraid to let go of the rope. And his buddies in the back of the boat are just yelling, just let go of the rope, just let go of the rope. And finally, against his, better judgment, he lets go of the rope, and thinking he's going to crash and burn, he slowly just glides down, his skis first, his feet next, his knees next, his thighs next, and his waist and then under the water, until his whole body was submerged under the water very gently. And basically he goes on to describe that an exit strategy for the believer in Jesus when they die looks just like that. That a lot of us are afraid of death and we're afraid of what's going to happen. But for the believer in Jesus, to leave this earth is actually a process that's quite beautiful, just like coming down off your water skis. And I got to read that to my family, this article that was in my inbox when I woke up that morning that gave me, and there were all kinds of verses in there, verses laced in there around, you know, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, and all these verses around death and the reality of eternity. And what's funny is, like, you know, and you get a lot of devotionals these days, and most of them are just having to do with, like, you know, be happy, don't worry, be happy, like just kind of light, surfacey kind of things. And he was dealing with the topic of death, and death and eternal life. And that was an article I needed in that moment. And it was God giving me a wake-up call of, like, I'm here. Like, don't worry, I'm here. I've got your wife. I've got you. I've got your girls. You can rest. You can relax. I'm in control. And it's a story I'll never forget. It's really beautiful.
Oh, thank you, Jonathan. We're going to pause here. When we come back, you know, you two were intentional about your marriage. You worked hard to build a strong marriage. But I've heard this story over and over. My hubby is a cancer survivor. That was many years ago. But I've heard the story, and it was true for us. But I've been hearing it more recently of when a spouse gets ill, suddenly the trivial is back in place where you see the trivial for what it is. And the important, it becomes important again. But when you don't have a crisis to press you into that point, you can so easily take your spouse for granted. You can get used to them, stop being curious about them. And before you know it, you're living so far beneath your spiritual privilege as kingdom people in a marriage because you maybe stopped trying, stopped appreciating. So on the other side, I would just love for you to just offer some advice. What would you tell your younger self, Jonathan, knowing what you know now, even though you both were very intentional? What would you tell your younger self in your younger years of marriage? Talking to Jonathan Pitts, his book, My Winter Season, Seeing God's Faithfulness in the Shadow of Grief. Gorgeous wedding picture of the two of them on the front cover. Got a handful of copies to give away. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. And if you've got questions, now's the time to ask them. Text them in. We'll be back in a minute.
Hallelujah, there will be healing
Thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live. Really, today has just been a powerful conversation, a gripping story about Winter Pitts. If you've heard of her, her daughter, Jonathan Winter's daughter, Alina, was in starred with Priscilla Shire in the film War Room. Winter Pitts is Dr. Tony Evans' niece, married to Jonathan, and at 38 years old, she died of a heart issue. Jonathan, her beloved husband, just released a book, My Winter Season, Seeing God's Faithfulness in the Shadow of Grief. And we've got a handful of copies to give away if you want to read a book that reads like a novel, and it's just such beautiful nuggets of wisdom in it all along the way. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. So it's kind of a big setup of a question before the break, but I'll just set it up again for those who maybe missed it. But, you know, you two are about to release, you actually did release the marriage book, but it released, I think, after she passed. So you were intentional about your marriage. But still, Jonathan, just knowing what you know now, what you've walked through, what you know about the brevity of life, anything you would say to your younger married self?
Yeah, I think maybe some people tried to tell me these things and I was just too young to listen. But I would first say, look at the differences between you and your wife and her differences as gifts to you, not as obstacles to what you're trying to accomplish. Winter and I were very different people. And one of the things that she actually helped me to do was just to honestly be still. Like, I was just fast-moving, fast-paced, get-it-done kind of guy. And it would take her 15 years and 27 days to slow me down, to just really check in with the beauty that God gave us in the world, and just to relax a little bit. And if there are any words that would describe what Winter gave me in marriage, it would be still, which early on in marriage I would have, at worst, resented. Like, I'd want her to speed up and be like me, be more like me. So I would say, look at the things that God has given your spouse as possible benefits to you, and things that God's using to sharpen you as an individual. And I'd say that. I would also say just never stop dating. Thankfully, we never did. It was hard, especially when we had our girls younger. We had a 5-year-old, 3-year-old, and twin newborns at one point, so dating was not easy. So we had to get really creative. But the thing that I'm really grateful for is, even as I think about the last couple weeks of her life, is that we were still dating. And it just kept things fresh and renewed, because oftentimes in marriage, things can become stale. You know, life becomes stale. And continuing to date, continuing to put each other first, continue to surprise each other with helping each other remember how loved that you are by the other is really mm-hmm. beautiful, and it goes a long way. Yeah, so never stop dating.
What you did for the 15th anniversary, I'm like, I want that scenario for one of my big anniversaries. It was so great. Would you mind just telling us how you surprised her and how you guys spent, just celebrated your 15th anniversary?
Yeah, well, I was, honestly, I was trying to take a trip. We were getting ready for a move, and I was exhausted from all the work I was doing. Winter was exhausted. I had lots of points. And I was like, hey, let's go to Hawaii. Let's go to somewhere, Bermuda. We get free flights, free hotel. And she said, you know what? She's like, I just want to spend the summer with family, like with each other. And so instead of taking a trip by ourselves, Winter wanted to be with our girls, which I'm really grateful for now, obviously. But I was driving one day and I heard this song. It was a mashup of From This Moment and Still the One, both Shania Twain mm-hmm. songs, that was done by a group called Caleb and Kelsey. And I knew instinctively I wanted to dance with her to that mashup, those couple of songs. And so I called a friend of mine who's a really creative guy, and I was like, hey, I want to dance with Winter to this song, but can you help me figure out a plan? And so what we ended up doing was taking this old home that my ministry had restored, this old mansion we'd restored, into a studio and a school. I set up this night where we would go to dinner. I actually took her shopping first, then we'd go to a nice steak dinner, and then we were driving back home, and I said, oh, we forgot to turn the lights off at the Hampton Estates, what it's called. And so I said, we need to go turn the lights off. And so Winter, thinking we're driving there to turn lights off, I just told her, hey, don't wait in the car. Come on inside with me. It's dark out here, and it's in the city, in Dallas, and not the best area of Dallas. I said, just come inside with me while I turn the lights off. And so we walked up on the steps, this beautiful colonial-style mansion, and it was candlelit. She's like, what's happening in there? And I said, just come on inside. And so we went inside, and there was music playing, and I had her favorite dessert laid out, chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream, melted down to almost liquid form. And we sat down for dessert. It was the chocolate cookie dough ice cream, and then also a bottle of Coke, because Coke was her favorite drink. And we enjoyed dessert. And then at one point, probably about 10 minutes in, that song began. And I just asked her, can I have this dance? And so we stood up and we danced. And we actually recorded it. So if you want to watch it, you can just Google like Jonathan Winter Pitt's 15-year anniversary. And you can find it on YouTube. It's been watched thousands of times. And honestly, it was a reminder to me, never stop dating, because you know, you never know which date's going to be your last one. And so for me, 27 days before Winter died, I was able to dance with her on our 15-year anniversary and see in her eyes how loved she felt and hold her in a way where she felt loved. And I'll never regret that. I'm so grateful for that moment. And I had no idea what was going to come, you know. And so I'm just grateful that God would even give me the inspiration to do it. And it's probably one of the last ways I remember her, to be honest with you. It's one of those memories that will just always be with me. And my girls were there, by the way. They came down the steps at the end of the dance and surprised with the song. They said these signs. I twirled her around, and I twirled around the last couple seconds of the song, and she just yelled out in excitement because the girls were standing there with a happy anniversary sign. So just a really beautiful
time. Brilliant. Come on. I mean, talk about a home run, dude.
I'm not that good. I promise you, it's all God. I'm not that good. So.
Oh, man. And praise God that you just had the divine inspiration, really, to do that. I mean, I often say when you walk in step with the Lord, you're being led even when you don't realize it. You know, the unction and the promptings. And, I mean, how good of God to do that for you both, you know?
Yeah, he's kind, very kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what do you know about God now that you didn't know before?
You know the verse, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived what God has planned for those who love him. I was recently in Eugene, Oregon, where our publisher is, and I was actually there with another woman who's named PETA, who I'm now in a committed relationship with, and we were just driving through on a trip, and I'm driving out of the town, and I'm thinking back to the first time that Winter and I went to that town, and having no idea what God would do through her life and through her ministry, and my mind was just blown. And so here I am in this new relationship that is totally God-ordained, I know it, going through all I've gone through, and I'm like, gosh, God, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived what you have planned for those who love you. Like, he loves his children so much, he's got massive plans. He had massive plans for me, those plans came to fruition, and he still has massive plans for me. And that's what I think we can all have hope in as believers in Jesus, that like we cannot imagine what he wants to do with our lives if only we'll just stay in lockstep with him, like you just said. Like that's the one thing. Simple steps of obedience is all that was required from us, and God will blow our minds. And with all I've walked through, the tragedy I've walked through, God is still blowing my mind with his goodness, and he's still blowing my mind with his kindness, and I'm forever grateful.
I got to ask, how'd you meet her?
Friends of ours are movie producers, a guy named Darren and Krista Moorman. They produced Same Kind of Different. A lot of your audience might have
just
seen
watched
that.
It the other night. Loved it.
Yeah. The new TiVo movie, they produced that. And one day they're sitting at dinner, and she's actually staying with them for a while. She's an actress. And he just felt like the Holy Spirit told him to introduce her to me. And so he did. And 11 months later, here we are. And that was during COVID. So COVID's been really rough, but in a way, I feel like God stopped the world so I could find love again, which I'm really grateful for. So here I am.
And how do you girls, how are they navigating that?
Oh, it's been a process. Honestly, as hard as walking through grief is walking through a new relationship, because it's, you know, every new thing in my life is a new stage of grief for them. And for me, it just provokes grief. And so I guess, you know, I didn't know this because I've never been here before, but it does require a level of trusting God, because otherwise you're going to end up in codependent relationships with your children, just trying to manage them. And God's growing them through it. He's growing me through it. He's growing all of us. And now there's beautiful relationships, and it's been a lot of work to get here, but that's what relationships are. They're just a lot of work. You know, you stick with it, you trust God, you put each other first. And so they're all doing really well. And I'm grateful to be able to say that, honestly, because there have been moments where I'm like, gosh, Lord, how are we going to do this? You know? Yeah, it's not been easy.
Yeah. And it isn't for anybody in that situation, so I'm grateful you've pressed through. And I actually was going to ask you, do you see yourself loving again? But I didn't want to overstep, so I'm so glad you told me. So happy for you, Jonathan. Praise God.
Thank you.
Well, thank
you. Yeah, you know,
thank
honestly,
you for,
I thought,
go ahead.
Oh, you're welcome. Sorry. Yeah, no, go ahead.
What were you going to say? 20
seconds. I was just going to say, I thought I would just be golfing and working for the rest. Like, I'm like, all right, ministry's great. I love golf. Maybe this is it, God. And then as soon as I kind of let go of any expectations, God just blew my mind, and I'm just really grateful. Yeah.
Wow. Well, we sure enjoyed the time today, Jonathan, and we wish you God's absolute best. Thank you for spending the time with us.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Great conversation. Pray you found some encouragement here, friends, and we will meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.